the fourth day of a 4.5-day conference for many of you, if you were here on Monday as well, so I appreciate you sticking through with us. I'm absolutely delighted and honored to have such a stellar panel here to talk about open source platforms, innovation, and Enterprise 2.0. I'm going to have the panelists introduce themselves and give, to borrow a line from Stowe Boyd yesterday, the escalator pitch for their company, which is to say even shorter than the elevator pitch, the two-minute version of what your company is doing and how it applies to Enterprise 2.0 or how it might be of interest to this audience. Then I have a set of questions that I intend to ask, and I'm also hoping to get relatively quickly to some questions from the audience. So be thinking about the kinds of things that you want to ask this panel as well. Very quickly, from audience left towards me, Bob Bickle from Ringside Networks, John Newton from Alfresco, and Jeff Watcott from Acquia. And Bob, why don't you start with your own introduction?
Sure. Thanks for coming. So Ringside is a new company, and we're focused on trying to bring social networking to the rest of the web. We believe that social is going to become kind of an integral part of every website over time. And, things like Facebook and MySpace have proven the engagement that you can get from users and loyalty and the idea of enabling word of mouth. And so what we're doing is making an open source platform that makes it easy for any website to build social applications. And we're not really so much focused on kind of like the wikis and blogs and things like that. We're focused on enabling customers to like take application and data and content that's specific to their site or the set of users that they have on their own site already and lay a social graph over that and also integrate that into the big social networks like Facebook and MySpace and so forth.
Great, thanks.
I'm John Newton from Alfresco, and our heritage comes from enterprise content management. We developed and built a pretty successful open source company, building an open source alternative to enterprise content management. However, I believe that the enterprise content management industry is transforming itself to become content services, where content services should be accessible from anywhere. And it's content that's used inside the enterprise, but also contributed by your customers, your clients, your partners as well. So building a mashup architecture using REST technologies is the direction that we're taking, and providing value-added services on the content as well, such as connecting it to people, providing feeds of information around what's happening inside of your enterprise. And that's the direction that we're going now.
Great, thanks.
And I'm Jeff Watcott with Acquia. Acquia is building an open source business around the Drupal social publishing system and a similar pattern to what Red Hat did for Linux. So we're the Red Hat of the Drupal open source project. Drupal is this amazing open source success story. It's been around about 7 years. It's used on 250,000 websites and also many internal applications as well. And it kind of grew up with Web 2.0. So as Web 2.0 functionality and its Enterprise 2.0 functionality appeared in the marketplace, it was quickly implemented in Drupal, either in the core of Drupal or through the 2,000 extensions that exist for adapting Drupal. As a result, it really conforms with all the patterns that you see here at the show. You can do multi-user or single-user blogging with Drupal. You can do wikis with Drupal. You can do discussion forums. And it can really be extended in all these different ways. And the real secret of Drupal is its open source community. It's a massive community. There's about as many people contributing to Drupal as there are contributing to the Linux kernel, which is an amazing amount of involvement. And I subscribe to an RSS feed of new Drupal modules that come out. And there's about 5 of those a week. And one popped up yesterday, which connects Drupal content pieces to MLS data. And you can import MLS data and have it be real estate information in the US appear on a Drupal site. And somebody decided that would be an important thing to have it in an application. And now that's available to everybody who uses Drupal. So it's a really powerful model. And we're building a business around that.
I don't know about the timing of the MLS service with the housing market in the U.S., but otherwise I can see a lot of applicability.
They need to better
They need to sell a lot of
houses.
You need to get that inventory out there. So I want to key off something that really all three of you mentioned in different ways, which is this notion of social and community. Now, obviously, Enterprise 2.0, a lot of the discussion here has been around sort of communities behind the firewall. and collaboration communities on things like intranets and within companies rather than consumer facing. I think one of the things that's very interesting to me is how, you know, and part of the thinking behind this panel was that, you know, open source and community have always sort of gone together. Do you think that open source projects and enterprise IT departments have things to learn from each other about how to manage communities? And I know that's phrased fairly broadly, but I wanted to leave it open to multiple interpretations.
So I'll take a shot at that first. So I was really involved with the open source community when I was at JBoss, and early on, one of the things that I felt was going to happen in open source is kind of a next evolution, is that it would go from the domain of vendors strictly to the domain of actual inside companies or collaboration between companies. And I took about 2 years off after JBoss got acquired by Red Hat, and I came back and went to the Open Source Business Conference in March. And I was so disappointed by what had not happened in the open source industry. You know, there's 10 banks that develop exactly the same software. I don't understand why those 10 banks don't get together, develop the same software that doesn't provide a competitive advantage, and do it in an open source collaborative type of way. It just still boggles my mind that, you know, open source is still the domain of vendors and not really a true community.
Mm-hmm. Well, I can say just quickly in the case of Drupal, it's not quite that way, and you know, one of the things that we've seen is really powerful about the project, and you know, we came into it late, similar to how Red Hat came in after Linux was already broadly established. You know, we're Acquia formed after Drupal had already been a wild success in the marketplace and already had a pre-existing community. And what the community did was they were very good at making it very easy for people to contribute and get involved in the project and welcoming new contributors, and providing facilities for them to create these modules that are extensions, so that when things were created by an organization, whoever was working on the MLS project, they had an easy mechanism for contributing that back to the community. And if it had legs and if it had interest to other people, then other people could get involved and carry it forward. And that's really been the power of what's carried it forward. But I think that many organizations that use open source software are missing out. They view it as just consuming open source software, not participating in
exactly.
it.
Exactly.
And the real power comes when you participate, because what you give, you get back tenfold.
Well, it's really kind of up to us leading the communities to make sure that that actually happens. With Alfresco, this is some of the first open source software that some of these companies have used. And they come from a community, not an open source community. They come from a content management community, a community of practice around managing information, be able to extract that from users and building things like knowledge management systems and whatever. And they haven't done this before. They have a lot to be able to contribute, and they actually do want to, but they don't even necessarily know where to begin. If they had come from an open source background originally, then it probably comes more naturally, especially if you started it as a student. But it's starting to happen. I mean, we're seeing it, and we're starting to see it in financial services in particular, because they're building the same application over and over and over again. And it's often some of the stuff that we've been talking about here, like a Facebook for the enterprise type of thing. So I think it's kind of up to us to lead that and to help them, help show the way as to how you can make that happen and making it really easy to be able to do that.
So it's definitely interesting. I mean, one of the things that, one of the themes of say the open source conference, OSCON, every year has been kind of tracking progress. And there was this kind of celebratory tone last summer of sort of, now we've won, we've arrived, we're here, lots and lots of commercial organizations are starting to leverage open source. People like Gartner are saying that every commercial software vendor will ultimately, or 80% will have adopted open source plans by 2009. And yet, at the same time, there's this feeling that within the enterprise, there are still sort of, I don't know if it's pockets of resistance or significant resistance or interest, but lack of knowledge, as Mr. Newton suggested. At this conference, when we're talking about Enterprise 2.0, a lot of the discussion has been about how do you take these relatively free-form, communal-based activities that are happening out there in the wild and apply them to a corporation that's more typically used to command and control. And I wonder if especially John and Jeff, you could address this. You know, Alfresco really began as an enterprise content management project. Mm-hmm. It began with its target being enterprises and replacing the enterprise content management vendors. Whereas Drupal really did start in that academic, university, communal, mm-hmm. nonprofit, those mm-hmm. kinds of organizations. Mm-hmm. So what barriers have you seen faced as enterprises try to figure out how to operate in a world of open source? And maybe what are some of the ways in which your project or the Drupal project may need to change over time to adapt to enterprises? Mm-hmm. And maybe, John, having started with enterprises as a target from the beginning, what did you do differently? So maybe we'll start there and then
Claudia. Yeah, okay. So, I talked to Bob when we first got started. It's like, what the hell do we do? How does this thing work? And you got to riff, you know? It's just like, you got to figure out how this thing works as you go along. And like I said, there was a community of practice that was actually ready to adopt this. But what we did was we just used the standard open source distribution model, which is make it available, let everybody know about it, and then the ones who want to will come. And because we came from a perspective of not necessarily being scary, we're sort of familiar to people, at least in terms of our backgrounds or whatever, they did come, and they came in very large numbers. And there were some clusters of different types of companies that did come to us. And interestingly, what was a surprise to us, it was the banks that came to us first. Also governments as well. And then retail, then manufacturing, and then just the more success stories you have, the more comfortable people feel coming to these open source projects and stuff. So I think you need to be able to present, you know, a face that is understandable to these guys, but it isn't necessarily happening at the top, and that's a really important aspect of what we're doing, is it comes from guys who just want to experiment, go ahead and try it out, and then they'll come to us. So there's no point in targeting, because if people aren't ready, you know, they're just not going to try it anyway. Mm-hmm. But if people are at least curious, they'll start to step into this. And I was just at a large oil company where they're starting to ask the questions that some of the banks and whatever asked about 3 or 4 years ago, but they're starting to come around right now.
It's because that's where all the money has gone.
Right? Yeah, yeah, mm-hmm. absolutely.
So, yeah, it's interesting. You know, as I said, we came into the project after it had already gone along for a while, and as enterprises are adopting Drupal, it does bubble up from below, you know, through developers who want to just get something going quickly, and they take free software to do it. And what our role has been is to try to, prevent that momentum from dissipating. And there's a set of things that cause that momentum to dissipate. If the developers start running into people who don't understand open source and will say, like, well, who's the company behind it and who are we going to get support from, then it can cause the energy to dissipate. Mm-hmm. If there's not good documentation, and there's no real conceptual mapping. You know, it's one thing to say, well, Drupal can do blogs and it can do wikis and it can do forums, but if you can't really say, you know, here's the white paper that explains how that actually works,
right,
and here's
right.
the case studies for right. how that happens, right. you know, it's not natural for an open source community to go and just produce
right.
higher order knowledge assets of that kind. Mm-hmm. They just create the code and off it goes. And so that doesn't naturally happen. And so that's what we view as the role of our company to help close that gap between what people have come to expect from commercial software and what the open source technology provides. Because it provides really powerful technology, but closing the knowledge right. gap, I think, is a real key.
So one way of thinking about Enterprise 2.0 is how do we bring the innovation and emergence, bottom-up thinking mm-hmm. and sociality from Web 2.0 and make it safe for enterprises? I guess the question is, how do we take some of the benefit and leverage that comes from using open source, agility, flexibility, low cost of entry, ability to fail fast and learn, and bring that into an enterprise without, pardon the expression, crushing all the innovation out of it in the process? That is to say, as you try to ingest these things into an enterprise, they become more enterprise-y and less open over time. And is there a concern that at some level, mm-hmm. by making Web 2.0 safe for the enterprise, we make it Web 1.0 again?
Well, I think the clusters of industries that I've mentioned are important because it really is about taking the risk and who is willing to take that risk. The most fascinating anthropological study for me is just watching the adoption inside of financial services. Mm-hmm. And because it's just a bit clearer as to why and how they're going about doing this. I think I got shot down the other day here, but I do think this whole notion of Enterprise 2.0 is just beginning. We're not mm-hmm. even anywhere near to what people are talking about right now. But I do believe that it is a generational change, that Generation Y is going to have a huge impact on this, but it's Generation X that's starting to experiment with this. And it's also the types of personalities that are picking this up as well, that, you know, the nerds started a lot of this stuff, but it's not the nerds that are taking and actually driving this. And in banking, it's the really aggressive guys who want to get out there, get more market share, make more money, and whatever, that are saying, you know, I don't want just a Facebook for the enterprise. I want to do stuff around that. So mm-hmm. I want to mm-hmm. be aware of what's happening with all the analysts and in the marketplace and whatever. And it's really about being aware of what people are doing. And as a result of that, I want to instantly trade on that. I want to aggressively go off and use that information so that I can make money off of that. So it's that sort of attitude, and it's that sort of generation, and it's that sort of personality that's really driving this. And it's just the standard technology adoption curve. Right. Those are the early adopters. The rest will come eventually, and it's just concentrate on those early adopters.
Great. One more question from up here before, and then we'll start going out to the audience. So, you know, as we've heard a couple of times about this sort of notion of, you know, we want to build a Facebook for the enterprise, or we want to connect people together. But one of the challenges in many cases has been, or that I've experienced with Optaro's clients and prospects, has been, you know, there are a half dozen software as service hosted platforms out of the box that can replicate exactly the Facebook behind the firewall, or can replicate community for me. And it's relatively easy for me to turn them on because somebody else does all the heavy lifting, and they're just sort of there, and I pay a monthly fee. And why should I bother to tackle something which is going to end up in mm-hmm. in my shop as a bunch of code that I now have to manage? So, you know, how do you kind of, I'm playing devil's advocate here since Optaro's obviously does open source.
You're just
source.
The devil, man.
I'm just
that's
the
all right. This is a great question.
But, you know, what's the kind of message to give to a business manager who really believes it's not about the technology, it's about the business question, when you're trying to explain why sometimes it does matter mm-hmm. what technology you're using or what approach you're using to deploying technology? Jeff,
well, I got some thoughts on that for sure. I mean, so I think a lot of what we're seeing right now is what I call drive-by Web 2.0, which is, you know, I mean, it's
like crowdsourced assassination.
I mean, who's walking this show floor to, you know, downstairs during the break times? You guys walked that show floor and seen the demos? Okay, who felt like everybody was saying almost exactly the same thing and showing exactly the same demo? Okay, this is what I'm talking about. Yeah, I mean, it's we're just skimming across the surface, and we're at the very beginning of the Enterprise 2.0. And the fact is, this is a major shift in the way IT is going to be done, and that's going to go through the same cycle that other things have gone through in the past. And if you're going to take it seriously, you got to think about it from a platform approach eventually. And you can't just take, you know, expect some solution provider to come in and provide you something in the cloud that instantaneously is going to work exactly the way your particular community needs to work. I mean, who here wants to live in a Katrina trailer, okay? If I told you, we've got a housing solution for you, it's prefab, I can put it on site immediately, you're ready to go, Katrina trailer, go for it. I mean,
so commercial software is like a Katrina trailer.
Well, I think in some ways some of the stuff that you saw downstairs is because it's not flexible and adaptable. The fact is, communities, we're talking about people and humans.
Katrina
here.
Trailers are very flexible, come on.
Yeah, exactly. But the point is that this is, you have to be, I think we need to all grow up and be in this for the long haul and think about the importance of flexibility and adaptability and the fact that if this technology really is going to impact the way people work in the organization, we're going to have to make several tries at it and figure it out. And I think that plays into the strengths of open source mm-hmm. software. Because open source software, with Drupal, you know, it's not like there's no product manager for Drupal. Okay, there's this philosophy of scratch your own itch. So if you can get in the forums on the Drupal project and be, you know, bitching and moaning about all the different things that you want the product to do, and people just tell you to shut up and show some code.
I see you've been reading my forum posts.
But the point is that you scratch your own itch, you come back, you deliver the code, and the project kind of automagically adapts to the needs of the marketplace. And that means that you can't predict what's going to happen. Like, you know, Twitter arrives. The next day, there's a Twitter module for posting Twitter content on Drupal. Well, you know, it just kind of morphs and evolves. And that's the kind of platform that you're going to need in order to really get value out of this. Nobody who's trying to provide multi-tenant hosting solutions, one-size-fits-all Katrina trailers, is going to be able to do that for you. And I think it's something that open source really plays well.
Great. So you mentioned the MLS listing and now Twitter as well. I'd like to ask all of you, what's the most unanticipated use or unexpected desired use that you've heard from prospects or clients or that you've seen in the wild? Given that open source has this kind of generative function, can accept things from the outside or can accept unexpected innovation, have you seen requests or seen things implemented that you would never have imagined when you...
Well, I guess I've been waiting for this one so long that, you know, I just thought it would never happen. But there's a guy in Australia that just took the whole idea of editing in Word and setting it up so that with no changes to Word or whatever, that when you're editing inside a Word, what's happening shows up in everybody else's Word that's collaborating on that same document simultaneously. And all the changes are there, and all the revision control and everything, and the granularity and stuff like that. It just seemed like a really hard problem. You know, maybe we'll get to that someday, and maybe we can get some universities.
It's kind of a holy grail kind of thing.
Yeah, and this guy had an itch to scratch, and he just went off and did it. And there's more than one guy. I think it was like three guys, you know, in the outback somewhere or whatever. But that was great. It's wonderful, and it's a wonderful contribution as a result.
And that'll find its way back into the product over time.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's on its way.
Bob, I know you guys are sprinting towards a 1.0 release and sprinting through a number of betas, which we've seen and played with, but you're also out in the market talking to a lot of prospects and talking to a lot of places that might use the software.
I think kind of the interesting thing about, you know, Web 2.0, Enterprise 2.0, and I think it comes back to some of the stuff that Jeff was talking about earlier, it's the whole idea of integration. So integration takes on a whole different flavor and meaning and stuff like that. Things become a whole lot easier to integrate. So, you know, suddenly an MLS or a Twitter, you know, integration appears. And, you know, what you know, we're really after is trying to drive towards this very open social web such that you can make connections, you can have different levels and types of friends and relationships within different contexts and things like that. And you know, the ability to, you know, go to the Wall Street Journal online and subscribe to a social subscription so I could pay not only for myself but my three best friends up here on the panel and drive all sorts of new applications. And those friends might be friends in LinkedIn or Facebook or MySpace or something like that. And people get connected not only within the enterprise but across the enterprise to customers and things like that. Mm-hmm. There's a, you know, this woman, Clara Shai at Salesforce has written an application called FaceForce that integrates Salesforce.com with Facebook. And you think of the types of integrations that you can do, and I think that's really the power that this whole whatever 2.0 is really all about, and we're just scratching the surface at what that is really going to drive. And I think that's where the innovation is. I think that's where everything's going to be going. And
yeah, that's great. It's going to be fantastic. That very much brings us back to, right, this is the original promise of the web, right? This is Yohai Benkler has said that this kind of new models of collaborative development is really the long anticipated consequence of the internet that's now finally arriving in all kinds of important ways and will be the real epical shift that occurs as a result, is all these new connections between people. So questions from the audience, and I don't think we have a mic that can wander out there, so maybe speak loudly and we'll start here in front.
Sure. So I just had a comment on what Bob said about banks and the comment about how Alfresco has gotten some penetration. I think that's interesting. I work for a financial services company. I can actually represent banks and insurance companies. It's kind of embarrassing. And I can tell you from my perspective that the interesting thing about that is that Alfresco kind of had an easy target. Document management systems, content management systems have always been commodities. That's something they've always bought from the outside. But the software you're talking about is the stuff they rolled themselves. And they think that it's the special sauce. They think that it's IP, that it's worth protecting, that it's the family jewels. So when you're down at the bottom trying to do something, you're fighting a very different fight because the boss thinks very differently about this software than he does about this software. So I was wondering if you had any thoughts about that, if you had any cool ideas about how to get on that one, how to pass that.
So just to paraphrase the question for folks who couldn't hear it, the commentator was saying that in banks and insurance and financial services, it's been relatively easy for open source to replace the parts that are seen as commodities. And it's been more difficult to replace things perhaps further up the stack where the business feels that there is IP or there is secret sauce or there is differentiation. And that has been one of the areas of resistance.
The thoughts that I had back in 2003 when I was talking to people about this is that, one, the open source development model is just a more efficient, better development model. So even if you just have a team of 10 people inside your own financial services company, you should be shifting to that. I think there's been hesitation in moving to that type of a model because of the scare tactics of the big enterprise vendors and because all the senior managers in an IT organization are old and they don't understand change and so forth. And I think that a new generation will drive that, and I think that the spread and proliferation of open source in everything that everybody does will help drive that. And then the second phase was this idea of, well, geez, if I'm doing open source development with my own group, I'm getting benefits from that. Why not do that kind of across my industry and so forth? And I'm hopeful that over some period of time, some of these walls are going to break down. I mean, like, I'm a really open guy, you know, been into open source for a long, long time, and I don't understand why that basic thinking doesn't spread further and faster. And, people clinging on to what's my competitive advantage is really kind of stupid.
Yeah, we've started at UpTrust, when we talked to clients, we started talking about collaborative engineering versus isolated engineering.
Yeah, exactly.
Right, when you start thinking about it that way, well, practicing isolated engineering, assuming that these five people are going to find the best answer that could ever be found to this problem, really doesn't make sense, right? And collaborative engineering, opening that up to more eyes, makes more sense. But
yeah,
John, no,
yeah, so you make a really good point about, you know, it's sort of, we do have an easy ride from a lot of perspectives that, you know, we are seen as a replacement technology, a value option to what already exists. And I think that's a really powerful model for open source to be able to get in there. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, Bob and I had a common investor with Peter Fenton who talked about what are the things that seem to work around open source. The other thing is the new frontiers. From my perspective, almost all innovation in software in the last decade seems to have come from open source. Everything downstairs, you know, I just went to each of the vendors and said, are you open source? No. Move on to the next one. And I went through the whole floor, and I guess we were the only ones that were open source as far as I'm aware. And
a bunch of losers.
Everything else is
so
a copy.
Proprietary software is like a Katrina trailer, older managers running and change, and non-open source. No.
Yeah, everything else.
Stupid.
Everything else is a copy of stuff that had already been invented through a collaborative environment. And it really is more like the university-led research in terms of how you create new ideas and concepts and whatever.
That's the other thing I was thinking. Yeah, yeah. University research.
Well,
it's a great example.
Yeah, it's like, my analogy is universities versus guilds. You know, started about the same time. One's closed, one's open. But ultimately, I think this commodity move and the whole research-oriented open source is just going to be a pincer on mm-hmm. most problems in open source. I still think there's going to be plenty of room for closed source in primarily niche problems in around business models and whatever that are just hard. And the only there's just not the critical mass, because what's really important for open source is critical mass.
What's interesting about that is basically what you just said is that the things that are pincers that are going to crush the proprietary approach are also huge advantages for customers. And so what's good for customers is bad for proprietary software. Remember that.
Yeah, absolutely.
However, we've got a lot of work to do. So let's get to work. I want to extend the question I looked for comments from you guys, but I asked Monday night about who was here Monday night, what cloud computing. I asked the guys from Amazon, Google. I said, look, you know, you're using this power mod, this utility. Mm-hmm. What about an underwriter's laboratory? Right. So you talked about risk. We need to build trust in the marketplace. Mm-hmm. Do that through establishing these various techniques. The UL analogy is just one way. But I can tell you from experience just the last year, trying to bring media into production in our company, that it was no easy task. Mm-hmm. I had to fill out this mysterious thing called an application support doc, mm-hmm. which had lots and lots of fields, and it wasn't all about integration. And integration is the most important thing I think, first of all right? But you go out there and you get open source products, and they have great integration capabilities, and they have, like, no virtual help desk, so their documentation mm-hmm. sucks. Or you go out and you find something like, actually, MediaWiki has a great virtual help desk, but the documentation sucks. Other projects have great documentation and mm-hmm. no other. We need to fill out all those categories. Now, what I'm going to suggest is you guys need to work together, because now you've got some capital behind you and some energy, right? So a guy at home contributing great code doesn't have the capabilities you have. Now, can you get together? Can we build these umbrella foundations, organizations, support, encourage, and maybe even label certain or help open source projects self-determine when they're enterprise ready, mm-hmm. so they can brand themselves mm-hmm. with the third party.
There's been a couple of efforts. Bernard Golden wrote a book. I don't know, probably about 3-4 years ago, and then Carnegie Mellon West has a capability maturity model for open source projects to kind of score and rank, you know, the maturity. What's disappointing to me, it's tough to figure out how the open source, you know, business is gonna work. You know, I've been a little disappointed in Red Hat's leadership, to tell you the truth. I think they could have moved faster and better to do some of the sorts of things that you're talking about and make an even bigger business than they are. And you look at a lot of the software companies that have come out in open source, and they've gotten acquired by larger commercial entities. You know, so JBoss disappears, MySQL disappears, Trolltech disappears. All these mm-hmm. companies get eaten by larger companies at some point in time. And all of us want to get eaten by a larger company and make billions of dollars and stuff too. You know, and then those open source projects kind of become the part of, you know, some bigger entity, and sometimes that's good, sometimes it's not. But I mean, it's a free market, and you know, so you don't get something for nothing. And you know, I just think that's part of the downside of open source, and it's part of the maturity cycle that's happening with it. Eventually, everything will be open source. You know, so many key components, and then they'll rise and bubble up to the top. But that's going to be another mm-hmm. 5 or 10 years in evolution.
Well, one of the I mentioned Peter Fenton before. One of his theses in open source is that in each category, ultimately there will be one or two winners in that category. And that's how they'll win, is to provide the types of services that you're talking about. It's a natural evolution of success in that marketplace. I think one of the other drivers, though, that can help make that happen and is starting to happen right now is that the analyst had originally been very reluctant around this open source, you know, kind of buying the Microsoft line. And by the way, I bought the Microsoft line once upon a time, that this is all about communism and whatever. But that it's just costs more and that, you know, it's a real hassle and integrate, blah, blah, blah. They're starting to come around and say, well, yeah, maybe there really is something here. Ultimately, the whole IT industry is aligning around stacks of, you know, of software to be able to provide the solutions we talk about here, but also ERP and whatever, that it's becoming more integrated, more appliance-like or more utility-like or whatever, you know, just switch on and you get the capabilities that you want. In those stacks, one stack is open source that is built around best of breed, and it's probably going to be that way for a long time. That is going to be its alternative. And the best of breed will be measured not just on functionality, but on quality of service, documentation, configurability, and integration. And the only other thing that can probably help drive all those things is standards as well, in terms of industry standards and expectations that this is how these layers interconnect with each other.
One thing I'll say on this, and I think it's a really, really great point, that there's more work to be done and that the vendors should be working together closely. The thing I'll say is that the professionalism, raising the professionalism of open source and the integration between the different systems requires a level of focus that commercial vendors can provide. And so welcoming commercial vendors into the open source community and as an enterprise, being really friendly towards open source vendors can really help fuel the kind of activity that you want to see happen. I can tell you all the people that on this panel are participating here have been on the phone in the last, you know, 3 months about ways that we can talk, get our software to work with each other better. And we do that not by saying, well, I'll allocate 10 engineers and you'll allocate 10 engineers and we'll go and do it in the proprietary way. We work through our customers and our communities to go and get that kind of integration to happen. And that's the model. So it's a little bit different than normal software companies talking to each other. But that can happen between commercial vendors. I'll just tell you a little story from Drupal. So we arrived on the scene back in December, and then we organized the DrupalCon conference here in Boston. I had 900 Drupal professionals out here to get together at the conference. And it was the first time that there had been a DrupalCon conference of that size with a company like Acquia in the mix. And people were kind of trying to figure out, well, what does a company like Acquia do relative to Drupal? And there was a lot of questions and so forth. But by the end of that week, we had people just coming out of the woodwork, coming to us saying, wow, you know, I see what you guys can do here. Like, I've been building Drupal solutions here for a long time, and sometimes it's kind of hard to sell to an enterprise because there hasn't been a vendor behind it. Now I've got you. Can you help me sell in the enterprise? We're like, yeah, that's what we do. You know, we can help close those gaps and help help the software feel more like an enterprise traditional software product to the organizations. And so that's what commercialization does.
And the challenge perhaps is I mean, as I think about Underwriters Labs, my concern would just be how long does it take to get a product listed through Underwriters Labs, and you know, how do commercial vendors, and Aptaros plays in that role as well as a third-party consultant helping people figure out how to leverage open source software. How do we get more enterprise friendly without losing the benefits of open source in the process? That is to say, as you add more and more layers of approval, or even if it's self-regulation, just getting a license approved through the OSI takes forever, let alone actually trying to get some kind of UL certification. So we want to be careful that we don't get too much of what we wish for, right, and lose some of the innovation edge as well. I'm going to go to the gentleman in the hat and then to the woman on the other side.
Yeah, so going back to the very first point you guys were talking about, and consuming sides as a result, but once you start producing, you're generally consuming as well. A number of times and a number of things I've had conversations where I'm helping someone out, for example, and they have something sitting in a proprietary spot, and I'd love to get that back, and it's like they'd be happy to give it to me, except that there are other layers of management above them that are preventing them, outside of engineering.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So it's more of a, so there's a certain level of culture that's not just necessarily the engineering organization.
Absolutely.
But beyond that, and getting it sort of generally understood, it seems very antithetical to normal business to work in this way. And I also wonder if you think that given Apache, LGPL, Puddle, which my company sort of somewhat sadly responsible for, and a few of these other things, if you think that there is a, that some of those things are not working, that licensing, for example, as you get an alphabet soup of licensing coming in from various products that you're trying to integrate, and I know lately I'm working on a cloud solution that's taking Hadoop or taking other kinds of things, and all the licensing is different, and we're having to go through, you know, this huge stack database of, well, that's not okay, you know, in terms of trying to do something. And I wonder if you guys have some comment on how we're gonna sort of straighten it. Can we get to one license?
Yes.
Okay. Understands and knows what it means. You know? Or maybe two or three, but that, you know,
right. So two questions there. One about being allowed to contribute back, which for some enterprises is a challenge from the legal department or from elsewhere in the company. And second about sort of license proliferation and how we get to, not one but maybe five, right?
Fewer licenses. It's a pain in the neck that people don't, that people can't contribute back in some companies. And it's a pain in the neck that everybody in the world doesn't agree with my license. Oh, I like LGPL myself, but I'm not saying mine is the best. I'm saying that there's a million people out there that are saying mine is the best, and hence you get a million different licenses, which is
so. Is your
a
stuff
real pain
be,
in the ass?
Is your stuff going to be LGPL?
Well, our stuff is LGPL, and the problem is that Facebook just open sourced their stuff, but it's CPAL, yes. And CPAL is incompatible with LGPL. And we actually wrote, so we did like what JBoss did with J2EE. We wrote a complete Facebook API. So we've implemented all their APIs. So now they open source about half of their APIs. So we ought to be collaborating and working with them, right? Now there's a license incompatibility, and we don't want to. One of the things we're concerned about with CPAL is that, you know, like we're working with some customers, with the Acquia guys, that I don't know that those end customers want to put a little Facebook logo to give attribution. CPAL is where you have to give attribution to the original guy that wrote the software. They want to put a Facebook logo on their website.
Right. You know? So if you are offering a service that's based on that code, you have to include the logo as
exactly.
Part of it.
Like we're working with Google on some of the stuff in Open Social. So we go to CPAL, and now Google wouldn't be able to use our software because they don't want to put a Facebook logo on a Google website. You know, it's like, it's so stupid.
So I don't want to cut us off too quickly, but the quickest way to drag an open source panel down is to get into a license discussion.
Well, let me just say one thing before
it's
we start. Cool. But this
yeah.
is this
but
is
it, we all know it's a problem.
So
yeah.
there are a host of potential issues, and we've surfaced them all here. But we don't want to just leave it hanging there. We're not in the dark ages anymore.
Right.
There are law firms out there. There are lawyers who get this stuff. And if you are willing to hire them instead of people who don't get it, they can help you sort these things out.
Right. There are good, clear answers to these problems that are relatively well known. It can be sorted out. It's a pain in the neck, but it is solvable.
Yeah. So
if you want to contribute code back, hire somebody like Aptaros. We'll contribute it on your behalf, and you don't have to use your company's name. It's a way we've done it for clients.
Yeah.
So on to this question.
My next job, going back from this conference, is to leave my organization to a process of acquisition. Mm-hmm. So I'm interested, Jeff, in what you were saying about mm-hmm. how do you close that gap? How do you put the white papers together in the documentation? Because right now, I have no idea how I can sell my organization on what you have to offer, as opposed to stick with SharePoint because we already bought it.
So the question of how an enterprise adopts or acquires open source software, which is often more complicated than acquiring commercial software because there isn't somebody there handing you the clear PO.
Well, how do I buy it, but how do I
sell internally? Right.
Internally. How
right.
do I persuade them to go this route?
Well, we can help with that. So one of our jobs, and I think the jobs of all open source companies, is to make purchasing and acquiring open source software feel like other types of software you acquire, without the high licensing fees. Okay. So what we can do is we can come in and give a presentation about what our software is, what its history is, the typical vendor presentation. We can respond to an RFP that you may do. You know, we have people who can do that. We can write up rational RFP responses. We can tell you what our support SLAs are and how that works, and you know, what our different plans are. We can give you purchasing options. We can give you upgrade options. We can tell you what your indemnification status is. You know, we can take all of the things that are a little fuzzy with open source software and clarify them for you so that you can have a specific, here's what I pay, here's what I get, here's what it does, here's how I get support. down the road. And that's in a sales process that we engage with that feels just like any other procurement sales process. It's just what you're buying is the maintenance and subscription part of the deal, not the big upfront licensing fees.
What might be different, though, is that, at least in our model, it tends to be more on demand. And so we very rarely actually visit customers, but we do things like WebExes a lot. And, you know, and obviously our websites,
yeah, all
our
websites. Yeah, we're not going to send a guy to spend, you know, 14
We spend a lot less time chasing the salespeople away.
I understand that. Through this whole conference, I've been hearing the future tense. Mm-hmm. You know, we need to solve the licensing problem. We're looking at doing something with the documentation and all this forward. Like, what's the gap to the future between now? Because we're ready to buy this now. Are you ready to support it, to document it, to solve the
I think we'd all say yes.
Yeah.
I mean, I
think
it's happening
now. There's something of an evolution on the panel in the sense that Alfresco is probably the longest standing of these companies in terms of its support for commercial enterprises. Ringside is slightly newer, though obviously has the JBoss heritage behind it and has done this before, and Acquia coming to the Drupal project relatively recently is maybe also a bit newer in this space. But all four of us have been doing commercial open source software for some time, working with large enterprises, helping them purchase, this is what UpTrust has been doing for the last 4 years, is building solutions on open source for enterprise customers and helping them go through that process.
Yeah,
so there are lots of people out there doing it today in addition to the people here. Yeah. There are many other companies out there in this space.
Most of it is Fortune 1000 as well. We have about 600 customers right now, and it's primarily Fortune 1000. They've gone through that process, and the support is there to do it. It's just a matter of, you know, is your company ready? Is your industry ready for it? Is the big question.
Well, I think the bigger challenge is also finding the initial contact, right? You're not going to find them in the trade journal as clearly as you're going to find SAP and Microsoft and Oracle. Yeah. Once you connect with the company, you have an easier...
Yeah.
I will say that from my perspective, I think most successful open source implementation in a company like yours actually didn't start with a commercial type of interaction.
Right.
It actually starts with somebody actually prototyping and using the project internally and gaining success that you internally can point to. Because at the end of the day, you know, Drupal, SharePoint, it's all software, and it has a set of they both have great sets of features, and they both have things that have problems with them, and so forth. So, you know, it's really getting experience within your own company, having a proof point. And then when you're ready to roll it out on a more broad basis, that's where a commercial company comes in. At JBoss, we had a term we called professional open source, right? Mm-hmm. So at that point in time, you know, there weren't a lot of companies that, you know, made open source professional so that you could feel comfortable executing inside of a real enterprise. And that's what these guys are doing.
Yeah, I mean, our model is one of people can go get the software and download it and do that trial and do that internal experimentation totally for free, and you can deploy it for free, do whatever you want with it, really. I mean, it's at the point where you think, wow, we're really making a significant commitment to this. This is becoming part of our enterprise infrastructure, something that we want to have for the longer term, and we want the things that a vendor relationship can provide. That's when you can engage with us, and we can help close that part of the gap. The other thing I'll mention is that we, you know, there are, in our case, there are almost 1,000 companies around the world who build websites and properties, internal, external, in Drupal, you know, day in and day out. We're in the process of converting all those people into our partners and solution provider partners. Some of them are small, some of them are large, you know, on the scale of Aptaros, and they can help advise you through the process of how to apply the technology in your specific scenario. And in that context, you know, it's no different than a traditional systems integrator relationship with a vendor-backed software. We try to make it feel as much like that. Is that getting to your issue?
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
So the man hasn't come to kick us out of the room yet, but it is 20 after 9, so we have actually run 5 minutes already over. So any last questions from the audience, maybe, before we adjourn? Yeah.
Selling, especially John selling to the CIO, I would imagine.
No, we're not actually selling to the CIO. It's somebody picks it up, as Bob mentions, it's somebody picks it up internally, builds a successful implementation, and then they sell it on up. And often, sometimes it doesn't even require the signature of a CIO to be able to get this thing through. That's part of the cost factor.
Millions of dollars.
The other aspect is that open source, not open source, it really doesn't matter to a CIO. It's software, it's valuable to a company. Who cares what the license is, really? We all think that open source is a better way to build great software, but, you know.
Yeah. Right. My experience has been that we're often selling into a business VP. The CIO is a check in that process, and they're typically a rubber stamp is an exaggeration, but there's a conversation that occurs in which they have veto power, and my experience has been that many of them do know what open source is. They may not be the most sophisticated open source people in the world, but they are familiar with the concept, and they understand the risks, and they make a decision on the business value. Again, not based purely on the fact that I'm either pro or anti-open source, but on the value of the solution being presented to the problem they have.
There's been a lot of
research. Once you have that conversation, that's very simple.
There's been a lot of research suggesting that CIOs don't know how much open source software is actually going on in their organization.
Yeah, that's absolutely true.
Yeah, that's true.
I've had a lot of CIOs who tell me we have no open source in our organization, and four questions in, I've identified at least five projects that they're using on a widespread basis that they don't know are open source. Well, thank you very much to the panel, and thank you all of you for attending.
Thank you.